Buck Studio and Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, as always, along with our call, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, the kids today are less fit than we were when we were kids, and what does that mean for our health in the future? Important thing that I think we really have to discuss and get that information.
Yeah, interesting
out there.
Stuff. What else?
Well, cholesterol guidelines, they've been the buzz. We've been talking about it. It's in the newspaper. What does that mean to you? What should you do? I think this is critically important information that we will go over.
I'm glad you're here to talk about that, because when that was in the news a while back, big news, I didn't have a clue. I couldn't understand exactly what those guidelines were.
Exactly.
So we'll talk about that. What's our recipe?
Our recipe is veggie breakfast burritos. How do you make a healthy breakfast for you that will push you through the morning so you can do everything you want to do for the day?
Looking forward to that. Our number again is 800-462-7413. You'll find a line open right now. To the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I have sort of an age-related exercise situation here. I'm 67 years old, and believe it or not, I'm still trying to play full-court basketball 2-3 times a week.
Wow.
And, of course, these days, most people are half my age, but I do okay. Mm. But people keep telling me, my peers, you should be doing more joint-friendly activities, swimming, walking, bicycling. And I probably should, but I know I would not get nearly any enjoyment and probably would therefore not end up doing it very regularly.
Yeah, I get that. Do you have aches and pains?
Oh, yes. You know, I do. I've had both knees scoped with meniscus problems. You know, broken fingers, etc. But I keep plugging along, and I'm just wondering if I'm doing myself a favor by doing this, or if I should listen to these people.
Doing yourself a favor by listening to you, or doing yourself a favor by listening to them. That's very, very interesting. So, what do you think is the best exercise? I have a theory about the best exercise.
What do I think that's the best?
Yeah, what do you think is the best exercise?
One that gives you enjoyment?
Exactly. You hit it right on the head. The best exercise is that exercise that you will do.
Right.
So, I mean, years ago, I was a member of the Jogging Lobby, card-carrying member, Jogging Lobby, had it in my wallet, not really, but Jogging Lobby. Go out, you've got to jog 20 minutes, 3 days a week, get your heart rate up to
80%. Yeah, I remember those days. You talk about it all the time.
All the time. Got to do this, do that, and it turns out that was wrong. Now, what was right was getting out and doing something. And it is true that aerobic activity allows you to do more aerobic activity. There's no doubt about it. But what we've learned in the last 25 years of research on exercise is exercise is exercise is exercise. That there are two things. Sitting is the new smoking. Sitting is the new smoking. That's really what it was. You know, we've become sort of a society of duffers. And when I mean duffers, I mean we sit on our duff. We don't do anything.
Yeah.
So your friends are right in one way. You know, you're going to run a risk of injury. You know, and my friends say, wait a minute, you're 66 and you're still out there skiing. You shouldn't ski. What about your knees? And you're going to bump into a tree. And I have to tell you, the worst accident that I have had in the last 5 decades was when I was at the bottom of a hill in California. And I'm just walking with my friend's dog. And my foot went one way. My body went another way. And I had fractured my ankle. Well, I didn't do it hiking in Nepal. I didn't do it skiing. I did it walking on a dog park in California. So I think you're doing the right thing. The long and the short of it is, I think you're doing exactly the right thing.
Even with the aches and pains and stuff?
Well, if the aches and pains are overpowering, which you don't have, but I have to tell you, I don't play basketball and I have aches and pains. What about you, Tom?
Never. Well, hey, you're 66 years old.
That's right. So you know what? A tip to you, keep playing basketball and stay with people younger than you doing exercise. That's my other theory is never exercise only with people your age. Exercise with people younger because they will spur you on to do more.
He's doing it all right.
That's what what I do.
You got it. You're doing it all right. Change your friends.
Okay. I was hoping you would say that.
You got the right answer, and thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. 800-462-7413.
No aches and pains. Right.
To a listener now, Zorba in Olean, New York. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
This is a question about the acids that they add to fruit juices, 100% fruit juice. Mm-hmm. See, for years I suffered eye dryness and tried all the obvious solutions like eye drops, humidifier, drinking lots of water. Finally, I stumbled across something that worked for me by systematically eliminating items from my diet until I found that when I didn't drink 100% fruit juice, mm-hmm. which was a major part of my diet before that, I had much better nights with the eye dryness.
Huh.
So I'm wondering if there's some way I can get that back into my diet, if there's something I can eat that counteracts that problem, or if it's just something that I have to eliminate.
So I just finished a great book called The Story of the Human Body by Daniel Lieberman. Wonderful book. And I like his concept in there, which a number of other people have said too, that fruit juice is junk food. Now, let me explain what I say when I say fruit juice is junk food. Fruit juice, fruits are good because fruits have fiber in them. When you eat them, you've got lots of fiber. You tend not to drink as much. It's not as caloric, a dense drink. There are many calories in 8 ounces of orange juice as there are in 8 ounces of Coke. When we drink juices that are industrially made often, unless you make your own juice, and they're highly concentrated, and they tend to be, you know, very specific species. So I think the long and the short of that is don't go back to fruit juice. And grape juice, by the way, is the probably the highest calorically dense drink without any added nutrients. I mean, it's basically sugar water with the taste of grape. But go back to eating fruit. And what I would do is I would pick the fruit that you like. So if you like grapefruit, then eat grapefruit. If you like orange, eat oranges. You need the fiber in your diet.
Have you ever heard, Zorba, of that being connected to eye dryness?
But I have never heard of that being connected to eye dryness. Now, just because I haven't heard it or because it hasn't been studied doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And so we know that people have lots of food intolerances and allergies, and we don't have a good way of measuring this. We don't have a blood test or a skin test or anything else. So, you know, you eliminate it from your diet and you feel better. I would leave it off, but I would go back to fruit. And I would sort of do one fruit at a time and see if it's fruit specific to you. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, that answers my question pretty well. Thank you.
Yeah, very different. Nice. Very, very, very big difference. You know, very big difference. You know, we are hunters and gatherers at a time, and we were really made to eat fruits and vegetables. But the fruits that we eat now are totally different than those of our ancestors because we've hybridized them to be super sweet, super caloric. And then we get the juice, and we don't get the fiber with it, and the fiber is critical.
Interesting call. 1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. But before we get back to the phones, Zorba, we talk about kids today and when we were kids.
Yes, yes. Kids today actually do not do as well as we were when we were kids, and there was the president's physical fitness. You remember President Kennedy? And it was sort of like the president's physical fitness.
Sure.
You know, and that's because we were considered lazy and slothful and gaining weight. We're talking about how many years ago?
Oh, a few.
I mean, we're talking
President
about
President Kennedy, obviously, it's 50.
It's 50
we all know that.
Years ago, and the concept of physical fitness was that we were not fit 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so it was the whole push towards more physical fitness. And we are now, when you compare the kids today, they are worse than they were than we were when they started the president's physical fitness campaign 50 years ago. The kids today are 15% less fit than their parents were, and they are less fit than their parents were, and they were less fit than their parents were, and it goes on and on.
We're going
in
the wrong direction.
We're clearly going in the wrong direction. So there are a couple of routes to take. One route is to say, well, our schools should have physical fitness, which I think they really should. It's going to take a long time to change that. Individual school districts are going to say, wait a minute, we've got, you know, the core curriculum to teach, and we're not going to teach.
Yeah, they pretty much have eliminated gym class, haven't they?
They have eliminated gym in many school systems, eliminated physical fitness, which is really not good. I mean, schools should be teaching ourselves, obviously, mentally what to do, but we should also do physical fitness. But you as a parent, if you're out there as a parent, I think I've got two suggestions. First of all, there should be one day in your house that is electronic electronic-free. Come home and you nothing electronic with your kids. Don't turn on the TV. Don't turn on. Come home. Take your cell phones. Everyone puts their cell phone in the middle of the table, shuts it off, and it's electronic-free time. Mm-hmm. And then do something with your kids, like walk. I mean, that's a parent's job. And the kids today are less fit because not only the schools – but the parents are not encouraging exercise among their children. So
kids really do need more exercise.
Parents can make a difference if they actually talk to their children and then start to do it themselves.
Yeah, that's the really tough
one. Talk the talk and walk, in this case, walk the walk, literally.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Richland Center, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I've had a persistent problem with toenail fungus. It's not the worst problem in the world, but it's rather irritating. And so I tried all the home remedies I could think of, and over-the-counter stuff, went to the doctor, and the culture came back for tryptophyton rubum. Mm-hmm. I think that's how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor prescribed terbinafine, pulse dose 7 days every month for 3 months. So I did this. It's been about 18 months ago, and it's still back.
Hmm. Tell us about some of the other things you tried before you went to the doc.
Well, first, I tried an aversion tactic. I used nail polish. Just cover it up, you know? Nobody will see it.
What color? What color?
Oh, I've got everything from blue to green to pink. A friend had told me to try Vicks VapoRub.
Vicks, that's the other. That's the other one that's very common. Vicks VapoRub.
And I thought that sounded a little weird, but so I tried that.
Uh huh.
And it did get a little bit better, but so I'm going to bed with stinky feet that I don't really have a cold, and I still have. It's not the worst smell ever, but every night, you know, that's not really a romance builder, you know what I mean?
Hey, but those painted toenails probably
were. Yeah, right. That's right, especially the green.
Yeah. So what's fact and what's fiction on that?
Well, first of all, the Vicks is pretty well, it's pretty well fiction. Pretty much the local stuff doesn't do much. What happens is when you put it on the nail, it may soften the nail a little bit, may make it feel better because, you know, there's some softening, just like when you get out of the shower, your nails are softer. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, Lamisil generic, which is trifenidine, the drug that you recommended, and the pulse dose is the way to go. Once a week, 1 week out of the month for 3 cycles, will cure it 80% of the time. And then the 20% that aren't cured, if you do a second pulse dosing, about 80% of those will be cured the second
time. What do you mean second pulse dosing?
Well, what happens is instead of taking it continuously for 90 days, we've discovered if you take it like, you know, the first 7 days of the month, you take 1 week on, 3 weeks off, 1 week on the drug, 3 weeks off, 1 week on, 3 weeks off. That's what you do. In other words, you're only taking the drug 7 days once a month for 3 times. That's called pulse dosing. And for others, they actually need to take it every day for 90 days. I mean, that's the other way. And the drug used to be frightfully expensive, which is why we got it in the pulse dosing. But now it's a generic, and it's really pretty cheap. So if it bothers you, I would go back now and do it again. Now, you still have a chance it's not going to work the second time. And you know what? If it doesn't work the second time, it's probably not going to work at all. And that's the nature of it once the fungus gets in there. And then the only treatment basically is to get rid of the nail. And if it doesn't bother you, most people don't get rid of the nail, but they have to sometimes go to a podiatrist to sort of buzz down the nail because the nail becomes too thick.
Okay. I did want to ask, do certain foods promote the growth of fungus?
No, it's luck. That's all. Bad luck,
good
luck.
I was hoping you wouldn't say red wine because I'm not ready to give that up.
It is not red wine. So
okay,
good luck.
Great.
Try a second pulse dosing and see if that works.
Okay, thanks so much.
Oh, sure. You're welcome.
Appreciate
take
the call. Now. Thank you very much. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take an email question from a concerned listener we will call Bonnie. She writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, 6 months ago, I had my first colonoscopy. I am a healthy, fiber-eating, moderate-exercising, 55-year-old female, and the procedure showed a healthy colon. Here's the kicker. Before this procedure, I had always had a regular daily bowel movement at exactly the same time each morning, after my cup of coffee and banana, of course. I was always in and out of the can in minutes. Since the colonoscopy...
Wait a second. Where do you think can came from? I mean, we do. It is one of the words for that.
Yeah, well,
in and out of the can.
It's shaped like that. Yeah. It has an opening on the top.
Yeah, but it's not made of metal. But you're right. That's where it is. It looks like a big can.
Yeah.
And out of the can.
Anyway, getting back to our... since the colonoscopy, not so. Could the procedure have changed the environment of my system?
Well, procedures like that, it's usually, the answer is yes. It could change, because what happens is, to have the procedure, you clean out your colon completely. And I've had other people who have said the same thing. They've said, you know, after my colonoscopy, my bowel movements were not the same. So maybe something about the prep that actually did it. But it's very interesting. So she had a timed bowel movement every morning.
Well, most people have some sort of schedule.
Yeah. But they do have a schedule, and it's quite interesting, because years ago I was taught that when people have colostomies, mm-hmm. That often they can time their colostomy and their bowel movement in the morning, just like they do, you know, for ours. And it's the food that you eat. It's the hot, you know, it's the coffee. Hot water will do it. The banana. It's really the food that you eat and the time of the day that you have it. But the answer is, it might come back and it might not come back, and she might be on a different timing schedule. So I don't have the ultimate answer. So she may not have the same bowel movement at the same time every day, but she might be on a new schedule sometime in the future.
Yeah. Do you do those colonoscopies when you're supposed to?
Yes, I do. Yeah, once every 10 years. Yeah, I do I don't mind taking that stuff. I'm way overdue.
Not because I don't like the procedure, which I guess is the usual reason. Yeah. I'm just afraid of what it's going to show.
Yeah, well, you're afraid. Well, fear should not stop you from doing it.
Of course it shouldn't. I'm not saying it's logical. I'm not arguing that this is a good idea.
That's right. It's not logical. Well, do it, Tom. You should just do it.
Okay. If you have a healthy living question to drop on Zorba, just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org, or you can find us on Facebook.
We have our recipe coming up. Lots more of your questions, of course. Our medical myth buster later on in the hour. Some more interesting research to talk about. All sorts of good reasons for you to stick around right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 1-800-462-7413. You can call that number now if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, our recipe, this one for veggie breakfast burritos.
That's right. Do you like burritos?
No, I'm not.
I
don't like
guy.
Things that are wrapped up.
Do you like dumplings?
No, I don't like dumplings at all.
You don't like dumplings. You don't like burritos.
I like the stuff that's in burritos.
How about tacos? Do you like
tacos? No, I don't eat anything that's...
Okay, 2 teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil.
2 little tea olive oil.
1 cup of diced red onion.
A cup of diced red onion.
Because it'll look nicer. Any onion will do, but I like to use it. Yep. And then you also want a cup of diced red bell pepper and a diced fresh jalapeno pepper. Choose how hot you want that jalapeno.
I probably don't want a cup of...
red pepper, but I won't.
Well, no, but a fresh jalapeno, you know, those
is that
are
about
like the,
a cup? If
well, the banana peppers, you know, those banana peppers that you see in the store when you go shopping, Tom, you know, the ones that are yellow and kind of a little bit longer.
Got it. Yeah.
I'm not talking about the what are the habaneros. If you had a cup of habanero peppers, you never do it.
Okay.
So a cup of red bell pepper, a cup of a banana pepper, a jalapeno banana pepper, 2 cups of fresh spinach chopped. You can use frozen if you want to, but if you use frozen, you've got to push out the water from the frozen spinach.
2 cups fresh spinach chopped.
That's right. A cup of black beans.
Cup of black beans.
1/4 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes.
1/4 little tea crushed red pepper flakes.
Okay. 4 large eggs.
4 large eggs.
And 4 large egg whites. So basically what we're doing with egg whites is we're putting in more protein in the egg with less cholesterol.
Got it. Okay.
And then 1/4 cup of shredded pepper jack cheese.
1/4 cup shredded pepper jack cheese.
4 whole wheat tortillas, 10 inches. 1/4 cup of salsa.
1/4 cup of salsa.
Pick the favorite salsa that you like. A large diced tomato.
A large diced tomato.
And then you're going to need a small avocado.
Small avocado.
You know,
now,
cube that.
I have a question. This is supposed to be veggie breakfast burritos, but we have eggs.
Well, eggs are, for many vegetarians, they will eat eggs, but
really?
They don't eat them. A lot of vegetarians eat dairy food. They'll eat eggs.
I thought then you're a vegan if you don't eat.
Well, vegans will not touch any animal product, but a lot of vegetarians eat eggs. Okay. So heat the oil in a large nonstick skillet over medium-high heat. Add the onion and peppers. Cook, stirring until softened, about 5 minutes. Then add the spinach, black beans, and red pepper flakes. And cook, stirring another 3 minutes. Then season with salt and pepper and transfer that mixture to a bowl. Then whisk the eggs and egg whites together in a medium-sized bowl. Add the cheese. Spray a skillet with cooking spray. That's how we cut down on the amount of oil that we're using, and reheat it over medium heat. Then reduce the heat to low. Add the eggs, scramble until they're cooked, about 3 minutes. Spread each tortilla with a tablespoonful of salsa, then 1/4 of the black bean mixture, 1/4 of the scrambled egg mixture, little diced tomato, little avocado. Season it with hot pepper sauce. Roll it up burrito style.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
It really is. Really. And what's really nice about it is you're adding, you know, if you don't want to add the banana peppers, the jalapeno banana peppers, don't do that. Just have it. But it's another nice way to have breakfast.
Yeah. Well, maybe I never have these wrapped up things because I believe,
you believe.
That they're hard to eat. That if you pick them up and try to eat, that stuff falls out all over them.
Yeah, you believe it. Because when you eat, you're so particular about how you eat. You want to make sure everything is there. You never get a juicy burger because you're afraid that the juice is going to come out. Come on, Tom. Make up any stories you want to about this.
If you'd like a copy of
this
recipe.
Are you going to try this? Would you try this?
Well, if somebody else made it,
put it on my plate,
I guess I will. How can people find this recipe?
You can come to our website at zorbapastor.org. You can look at that recipe. You can find other recipes. That's zorbapastor.org. Or remember, we are all over Facebook.
Let's get back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Neenah, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I was listening to your show a couple of weeks ago and you were talking about noise problems and how it can cause health problems.
Mm-hmm.
I am a person who has lots of trouble with noise, particularly outside, whether it's lawnmowers, leaf blowers in particular.
Yeah, I'm into that.
They can ruin my day. If I'm outside and trying to enjoy a nice day and somebody starts up a leaf blower, that's it. I have to go inside. It just ruins it. And I also, unfortunately, live close to a noisy factory, and they grind up wood and they make particle board. And so it's a continuous grinding noise. You know, they run 3 shifts, so it's 24 hours all the time. And there's a break on Saturday afternoon and Sundays. But there's also low frequencies from that factory.
Oh, my goodness.
That sometimes cause me to lose sleep. And I know there's nothing I can do about the factory. I've already spoken with the mayor about it, and they sent over the city attorney, and the factory plant manager had some kind of a muffler installed on the stack, and it did help a little bit. But it's still there.
You've got you're in the middle of noise pollution. Yeah. I mean, that's what you are.
Sounds awful.
And it's not funny. It's not as if you have to go to Walden Pond. But noise pollution is a great big giant issue. You know, one thing as well. You can't live there. Why don't you move? But moving is not something that we do at the drop of a hat.
Right.
You know.
Unfortunately, we just moved into this house about 9 months ago.
Oh,
and every time we came to look at the house was on a Saturday afternoon or Sunday.
Goodness.
And it was quiet then, and we knew that there was a factory there, but
you didn't know what it was.
People told us it ran 24/7, but it was quiet.
Yeah, I have a question. When you looked at the house on Saturday afternoon or Sunday, did they time you and say, "Why don't you come at this time and look at our house?"
Yeah, they told us when we need to look. Unfortunately, the previous owner didn't have that box checked.
So you're in the house. You know, you're not going to be able to do much about the factory. You know, you're living next to the factory. And, you know, one of the things you can do, you know, if you have good relationships with your neighbors is say, you know, is there any way you can do this on a certain afternoon or not? Because sometimes people will do that. They'll say, "And I didn't realize it bothered you, and I'll do it, you know, in the morning, or I'll do it in the afternoon." I mean, when I have a party at the house is when I really don't want to have it done. I go to my neighbor, I send him an email, and I have two neighbors, and I'll say, "We're having a party at the house, and do you mind, you know, not mowing your lawn or using the snowblower?" And they don't mind that. In fact, they've actually told me, "Oh, gee, I didn't realize it." They're really good neighbors, and so I've been able to do that. You're not going to be able to do anything about the factory.
Right.
You know, they put up a muffler. Yeah. But there was a misrepresentation in the house that they didn't check that box with industrial noise. But I moved, when we moved into our house 34 years ago, the master bedroom was in the front of the house facing the street. We live in the country. But there's a country road not too far away, and I would hear cars going down the country road in the morning. So I moved to the back of the house, and we changed our master bedroom. My wife didn't care at all. She said, "What noise?" I said, "Don't you hear the noise of those cars?" Mm-hmm. So we moved to another room in the house because I didn't like the noise. And every time I slip in the other room, I'm still bothered by the noise 34 years later. And I'm not particularly noise sensitive. So I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I think you're noise sensitive, and that's very hard. There's not much you can do other than to adjust to it. You know, and as I said, you just moved into the house. You're not about to move to somewhere else. So.
But I think that's a great idea, though, because we could move our master bedroom to the other side.
Oh, do it. Do it.
You know,
I did it 34 years ago. It's the best thing I ever did. I hear the birds in the morning, in the summer, because it's right on the other side of the house. I love it. I look up to a different thing. And the noise cut you. You know, go sleep in the other room and you may find a difference. The noise is 95% gone on the other side of our house. Time to call the decorator and the carpenter. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you for your suggestion.
We appreciate it. We live on a corner, and there is a lot of that kind of yard noise going on all around us. Two owners before we got the house, the guy tried to coordinate with all of the neighbors. "We'll mow the lawn on this day." Guess how that worked out?
How's that working out for you? Right. Not at all. Yeah. Not at all. But my neighbors, when I have a party, parties are kind of different. But if I ask them never to do it on Sunday afternoon, don't think it would work.
800-462-7413. It's toll free, of course. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Midland, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I just have a question for Zorba. I've lost quite a bit of weight, and I work out quite a bit, but I still cannot lose the belly fat. And I've read and I've heard that, you know, it's sugar and the new thing about inflammation, but everything else has gotten firmer, but the belly fat is still there. I mean, am I ever going to get rid of it? Do I need a tummy tuck or liposuction, or what do you do? Is there any hope?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we have to look at why we're fat. You know, what's fat?
Right.
What was fat for? You know, so from an evolutionary point of view, fat was very important to make sure that we had a steady state of calories, you know, during times of want. You know, we're not in a time of want now.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a time of plenty. If you look at what the typical fast fast food was in 1950. It's 250 calories more than it was than it was in 1950 for half the price. I mean, so it's an enormous number of calories that are cheap, industrial calories that are cheap and easy to give. And if you look at women, why women have more fat on their bodies than men, it's very clear it's because they had to nourish a baby and, you know, pregnancies, you know, half of all the babies died. And so the fat was really important for that. And the fat provides a steady state of energy to our brains. Because our brains, which take 20% of our basal metabolic energy before we move, go to our brains. 20% of our calories go to our brains. And if our brains do not have continuous calories for 3 minutes, they start to die because there's no stored fat in brains. In other words, so, you know, and I just wanted to give that evolutionary perspective. Now, specifically,
okay, well, my brain will be fine. Yeah.
Your brain will be fine, but your tummy is not. And once the fat is deposited, it's hard to get rid of it, and we get more fat. Fat is more deposited than muscle as we get older and older and older. And so, you know, what's your height? What's your weight?
It's about 145.
Mm-hmm. And how tall
and
are you?
5'6".
So the reality is you would have a thinner tummy if you went down to 125. Or 115,
okay.
And that's hard, and it would come off everywhere. But there's another reality, is that we get older, we sag. So even if you got rid of it, you would never have the same tummy that you did when you were 20, because you don't have the muscle mass. And it doesn't matter how much you work out, six pack abs do not look the same at 60 as they do at 16.
Yeah, but working out, doing ab exercises. Does help.
It does help because it will definitely help, but it's not as if we have a way to take off the fat from the tummy versus the buttocks. The only way we have is by basically getting rid of, you know, a lot of those calories so that we burn off the fat. But a lot of people, you know, a lot of you look at late night exercises and they'll say, do the ab cruncher and my abs will look like that. And for the most part, they don't. It's a function of the calories. You do get a little bit from strengthening that, but you're still not going to look the same. How old are you, if I may ask?
I'm 53.
53. So your muscle, you still have good significant muscle mass at 53 versus, we'll say, 73, 20 years from now. But the loss of weight is going to eventually lose weight.
So 125 is a good weight for somebody 5'6".
Well, at 125, your tummy is going to look better. Yes, there is hope. There is hope, and exercise will help, but calories count the most.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks
I'll
for your call.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye. We appreciate the call. That explanation, needing fat for the brain to work, explains
that?
A lot. I'm skinny. I'm very skinny. I have an excuse.
That's right. Big brain Tom is skinny. He's feeding his brain.
No, it's the other way around.
Oh, right. No.
I don't have enough fat to make the brain work. That's... Well, before we take another break, Zorba, it's time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's email comes from a loyal listener, Ray, who needs some clarification from the good doctor. He writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, I have a bit of a disagreement here. I heartily endorse using melatonin as a sleep aid. However, when I have taken the standard 3 milligram dose, the result is sleep complete with bizarre and very disturbing dreams. And my 26-year-old son experiences the same. Some manufacturers supply it in 0.3 or 3/10 milligram doses, which I find ideal, and it clearly induces sleep in me. Why, then, do you recommend doubling the 3 milligram dose?
Well, first of all, we have to look at what you're taking. Even though it says melatonin, we don't know what's in there. Because when we look at supplements, they are regulated the same way cosmetics are.
Yeah.
And they are not regulated by the FDA in the way they should be. So you don't know what you're actually taking. And so I don't know if you're getting melatonin or you're getting something else that's junk in there, because 20% of all the supplements don't have actually what's in there. They have like maybe 1/10 of the amount.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, I would go to consumerlab.org, pay the $8 or $10, whatever it is for the month. Go in there. They're my favorite go-to website, and we'll put this on zorbapastor.org. We'll put the link of Consumer Lab. And the reason is they test these things. And I would only buy the melatonin they test. And the first thing I would do is I would buy that melatonin, and I would purchase it and see if it works.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't work, you have two choices, half the dose or double the dose. In other words,
he went down. And
yeah, I would go down, see if that works, and then I would go up and see if it works. I mean, I would try the melatonin.
So you don't necessarily recommend doubling the dose.
No, first thing I would recommend is I don't know what he's getting.
Yeah.
He may not be getting melatonin. He may be getting an artifact that's placed in the pill to make him sleep, because some of these pills have other things. He might have Benadryl in the pill. Benadryl is an over-the-counter antihistamine that's used as a sleep aid, and a lot of people take it, and they have funny dreams on it. Mm-hmm. So they might have Benadryl in the melatonin pill, and nobody knows.
That can happen.
Red yeast extract, perfect example. A lot of people were taking red yeast extract, and then the FDA gave a stop and desist order because it was sprinkled with lovastatin, which is the first drug that we gave. It's a statin to lower cholesterol, and it was put in red yeast, and people were getting muscle aches from the red yeast, and they weren't getting muscle aches from red yeast. They were getting it from the lovastatin placed in. Get a reliable source of melatonin. Try the dose, and then if that fails, half the dose or double the dose.
Think Zorba has doubled down on the wrong hand? Drop us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org, or you can find us through Facebook.
Some interesting research coming up. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster 2, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, we talk about some research, specifically, Zorba, new rules on cholesterol.
Yeah, new guidelines. Rules are kind of interesting. Guidelines are you know, a little bit more general.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I get it. I get
little
the
guidelines.
Difference. Yeah.
Anytime you change the guidelines, there's controversy.
Sure.
In fact, there's controversy if you keep the old guidelines or you go to new guidelines.
Well, what are these?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the organization that really sponsored this. This is very important. These are very important organizations. The American Heart Association is behind this. So these are important guidelines.
Okay.
These are not new funky guidelines that somebody brought up. This is even though there are doctors who disagree with it. So the new approach puts people in broad categories. So first of all, the first most important thing is we have been a slave to numbers. Okay? For years we've said if you've had a previous heart attack, previous stroke, get that cholesterol below 70. And that's because of research, earlier research that seemed to show that was important. These particular guidelines say they are not important. What's important is, should you be on a statin or should you not be on a statin? So instead of taking these large doses of statins that some people find intolerable, you'll be able to take smaller doses. So there are two broad categories. The first category is the high-risk category. Diabetes, that's a high risk, previous heart attack, everyone should receive a statin except in rare circumstances, okay? So if you have diabetes, you should be on a statin drug. Those are the recommendations. We used to say, well, if you have diabetes and your cholesterol is okay, you're not going to be on a drug. No, the new studies say yes. And people with extremely high levels of harmful cholesterol, that's the LDL cholesterol above 190, not above 130. There are many people on statins who have a cholesterol, LDL cholesterol of 140. These new guidelines say, no, it should be 190. That's when you should be on a statin. Okay?
Yeah.
That's important. And the second issue that's also important is that getting your cholesterol down below 70 is not an issue. Now, the second group are people who have, in the next 10 years, if they have a risk of having a heart attack. And it's a formula. And I can't go over the formula because it's a formula that basically your doctor plugs in, or you can go to the formula yourself. We'll have it on our website so people can look at it. So if your risk of having a heart attack in the next 10 years is greater than 7.5%, you should also be on it.
Well, I should see my doc because I'm taking one of those statins, and I don't think I'm have any of these.
Well, you have to. Elements. Well, you may not have. You don't have the diabetes. You may not have those, but you might have a 10-year risk of greater than 7.5 because you're an older
adult. My doctor can tell me that.
That's exactly it. So it's a new formula. It's important to discuss this with your doctor, and it's important that your doctor read about this and make a decision because I think these new guidelines are extremely useful.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
My issue is I've got very flat and wide feet, and on my left foot, the third toe in from the small toe seems to override the skin on the second toe in as I walk on that all day long. And then at night when I take my shoes and socks and stuff off, about an hour after I go to bed, it's just excruciating pain in that toe.
Oh, pretty bad. How long has that been going on for?
I would say it's been going on about a year.
About a year. You have hammer toes at all? Are your toes changing shape?
No, I've got a hammer toe on the right foot.
Okay, but not on this particular
foot.
Uh-huh. What kind of shoes are you wearing?
I switch between tennis shoes and work boots.
Tennis shoes and work boots. Okay. And then how tight is the shoe box? And the shoe box is when you put your foot into a shoe, where your foot is called the box. My father-in-law was in the orthopedic shoe business, and he always said, the shoe box, the shoe box, the shoe box.
That's probably the type of shoe I should have. I buy the widest shoe I can buy.
Okay.
Sometimes they all the way up to a 5E.
Okay, and that's exactly it. I mean, you can get actually super, you know, wide shoes, on the internet, and your local shoe store will of course have that too. But you want to pick a wide shoe. The other thing, sometimes there are two other things you may have to do. You may have to put a spacer between your toes.
Okay, and I did that. I've done that at night. It seemed to help for a little while, but now it doesn't help at all.
Oh, what you may have to do is go and see a podiatrist.
Okay.
Because this may be an arch issue. You may need to have certain shoe inserts that basically allow you to walk in what's called a forward thrust position, which is a little bit different, and you put them inside the shoes. I would see a podiatrist. I wouldn't go to one of the commercial places because I think you need a real honest-to-goodness podiatrist to look at your foot, maybe take an x-ray, make a decision of what you should have for a shoe insert because it can be pretty awful if you have terrible pain at the end of the day. What do you do for a living?
I walk a lot. I mean, I'm in a laboratory, so I'm constantly on my feet.
Yeah. Have you, by the way, tried Crocs?
No.
I would do that before I would go spend my money on the podiatrist, actually. I love my Crocs, and they're they really allow you, your toes to fan out, and they've got sort of a really cushiony walk to them, and I love the name. I've had the generic and the name brand, and the generic do not compare.
Yeah, but they're so ugly. You can't wear those things with other people around.
But in his laboratory. I'm talking about in his lab. He's on his lab all day.
Yeah. Sure.
And so Crocs can be I would try the rubber Crocs, and there are a number of surgeons who I knew years ago who used wooden Swedish sandals. I can't remember the name of them, but they weren't Birkenstocks, but they were sandals that had sort of a high heel, and they gave an arch to your foot. And I would try that. And so they basically cupped their feet and cupped their arch so they were not walking as much on their toes. So I think first I would try some Crocs or some of these wooden clog shoes, type clog shoes, and see if they work. And if not, I'd go to a podiatrist and look for an insert.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck. Let us know what happens.
Yeah. The Crocs make sense for him, I think. I tried
in a
Crocs.
Lab.
I have very skinny feet.
Yeah.
Okay. Those Crocs are really wide.
They're wide for you, but he has wide
feet. Yeah, I know that. I'm saying that's a good idea for him.
My foot is pretty wide. So maybe they have skinny feet Crocs they don't. They just have wide.
Well, now I'll find out if they do, but I...
now you'll find out. Why, you think somebody's going to send you an email? Or
not me. They'll send you an email. Nobody can get to me.
Zorba@WPR.org. That's Zorba@WPR.org. If you've got shoe suggestions for our friend, please send them on.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth has a listener, Michael, buzzing with curiosity. He writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I recently received an email regarding using honey and cinnamon to relieve a cold. It said that a teaspoon of raw honey and a quarter teaspoon of cinnamon will knock out a cold within a day or two. It also claimed both honey and cinnamon are antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal. So they also knock out bladder and kidney infections, reduce blood pressure, and act as a pain reliever for arthritis.
I love it.
Soon be 68 and am a type 2 diabetic. Are these claims correct, and will this affect my blood sugar?"
Well, of course it'll affect your blood sugar. Sugar affects your blood sugar. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether it's sucrose or fructose. Doesn't matter if it's honey or a Coca-Cola or orange juice. It's going to definitely affect your blood sugar. And wouldn't it be nice?
I was just going to say, wouldn't it be wonderful?
Wouldn't that be nice? All we have to do is have a teaspoon of raw honey. You know, raw honey is the stuff that turns white in the container. Yeah. And a quarter of a teaspoon of cinnamon. And not only will get a cold, but it's antibacterial, no bladder, no kidney infections, reduced stroke because it reduces our blood pressure, and no pain for arthritis. Yahoo! I could, you know, I would make a mint out of just putting this. Might as well put it in a pill even.
So this is total bunk.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's total bunk. Now, my mother, God bless her, may she rest in peace. If I had a cold, she gave me raw honey without cinnamon, and I think she gave it to me because it soothed the back of my throat and would shut me up.
Yeah,
That's what I think ultimately happened. But I don't think it does anything for a cold. Bladder, kidney infections, arthritis, high blood pressure, or cholesterol problems. I think it just tastes good.
That sort of thing, it can make you feel a little better if you have a cold.
Yeah, and that's okay. When you feel better,
it deals with the symptoms a little bit.
It deals with the symptoms. You feel good, you're going to feel better.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just post it to our Facebook page or send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, and a listener in Antigo, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
First, I have to tell you, you've got a great laugh, Dr. Zorba. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It really draws me in. I had had serious acid reflux problems and abdominal pains. I ended up in the hospital, and they said that my gallbladder was infected. The antibiotics were working, but they said it could be a recurring thing, and so they suggested that I take it out. I was in still so much pain and realized that it wasn't just my gallbladder after I read the lab reports, that it was my pancreas that was completely littered with yeast. And hence, the antibiotics would work to a certain extent, but then all my entire body seemed to just be dying at the same time. I have an herbalist. I called him up. I went to see him. He put me on a two-week cleanse, and I'll tell you what, I've never felt better in my entire life. And what I was wondering is when we get on all these antibiotics with doctors, because you really can't turn your back on the medical world and just jump into the alternative world completely, but I have seen that probiotics being put back into my system really helped out. Do you see that coming in the future with our medical world at all, Dr. Zorba?
First of all, I want to clarify a couple of things. You can't see yeast in your gallbladder. There is no yeast in the gallbladder, so I don't think you had yeast in your gallbladder.
No, it was in my pancreas. The yeast.
I don't think you had yeast in your pancreas either. Now you may have had a pancreatitis from your gallbladder. That's common. You may have inflammation in your gallbladder from either a virus, alcohol, triglycerides. Something called triglycerides in the body can all cause inflammation in the pancreas, and it can just happen in itself. But you can't look at any scan and say there was yeast there. Now, you went to the herbalist who gave you a cleanse and you feel better. Whatever the herbalist gave you made you feel better. That's great. That's awesome. What it actually did to your body, I don't think we know scientifically, but I think it was a good thing to do. You feel better. And when you have less pain and less distension in your belly, it is going to change the mood of your body. So you're 100% correct on that, and that it changes the mood. But I don't think there's any evidence that you actually had yeast in the gallbladder. Now, the probiotic thing is very interesting. When we take antibiotics, we do change, you know, the flora in our body, the bacteria in our body. And so we can take antibiotics. We can get an overgrowth of some bacteria called C. difficile that produces diarrhea.
Correct.
And there are a lot of issues, which is why we want to stay away from antibiotics unless we need them. And the most common probiotic you can take is yogurt. Yogurt is a probiotic. You don't have to buy fancy, expensive Activa yogurt that has more probiotics. Yogurt itself has lactobacillus, which is a wonderful probiotic. And so having a container of yogurt every day for you could be very useful. It's 400 milligrams of calcium, which is about half, a little less than half the calcium you need for the day. And it's a probiotic, and it's great. And you can also buy probiotics over the counter. And the medical profession is starting to move more towards probiotics after we give antibiotics, and that's a good point. But I wanted to just give you a heads up on that. I have one question. Did you have gallstones in your gallbladder?
No, I had nothing.
Good.
It was just infected. Good. And what my herbalist had done was, is he uses an old method of, he uses a South Pole magnet. I guess it's from the Asian community, and puts herbs on my body. And what I had taken was called Golden Seal, nature's antibiotic, and used that to flush out my pancreas. And that's how he found out. And he's been, and I hate to use the word cure, but I've read in my Pathophysiology of Disease book that even in the medical world, that if you are in remission for at least 5 years, you are considered cured through the medical community if you've had cancer or anything like that. And he's been curing people for 40 years. Uh-huh.
Well, that's wonderful.
And it really is. And I'm just hoping that maybe we can merge these two worlds together, because I believe that it's not one over the other, that both need to come.
I think you're exactly right.
This is incredible stuff.
It is. And it's incredible that your life has changed with this. So,
it really is.
So, good
and
luck. Thank you.
That you took my call. And thank you so much. And let's get everybody healthy.
Thanks a lot.
We all agree with that.
Take care.
Before we go for the day, Zorba, here's a group we have yet to hear from, the Sewer Police.
The Sewer Police.
The following email
comes to
us from Ralph of the Madison Metro Sewage District.
Okay.
He writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, you recently gave great advice on cleaning the toilet seat with disinfecting wipes. Unfortunately, most people will drop the wipe into the toilet, not knowing the grief these things can cause for sewer workers. The costs of plugged pumps or pipes are not just monetary in maintenance terms. The wipes are labeled as flushable or biodegradable, but they spend many hours in the sewer system and can cause backups. And as you know, the health effects of wastewater backups into basements or the environment are of great concern. We love your show and advice. Thanks for sharing what you can with listeners on hygiene and also the care of the sewer system."
Oh, you know, that's absolutely wonderful.
Really interesting.
The wipes do say flushable.
Yes, they
do. Obviously, the sewer people have seen that sometimes flushable also means cloggable.
Yeah.
And, you know, toilet paper obviously dissolves, and maybe these flushable wipes must not dissolve nearly as much. So maybe people have to think twice before they use the wipes on their derriere.
Yeah, go into the landfill instead of into the sewer system?
Yeah, maybe that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Sure.
If you think Zorba's advice is not going down right, drop us an email at...
Drop us. That's very good. Drop an email into the can at zorba@wpr.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org. And remember, you can find us on Facebook.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping that you'll be with us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1207Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.